ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 नारायणं नमस्कृत्य
Chapter 17. Maharaj Prithu becomes angry at the Lord, at the earth. Text 27. Tvam,
tvam,
stabdham,
durmadham,
Translation. You are very much puffed up with pride and have become almost insane. Presently you have assumed the form of a cow by your mystic powers. Nonetheless, I shall cut you into small pieces like grain, and I will uphold the entire population by my personal mystic powers. Purport. The earth informed King Prithu that if he destroyed her, he and his subjects would all fall down into the waters of the Garbha ocean. King Prithu now replies to that point. Although the earth assumed the shape of a cow by her mystic powers in order to be saved from being killed by the king was aware of this fact and would not hesitate to cut her to pieces just like small bits of grain. As far as the destruction of the citizens is concerned, Maharaj Prithu maintained that he could uphold everyone by his mystic powers. He did not need the help of the earthly planet. Being the incarnation of Lord Vishnu, Prithu Maharaj possessed the power of Sankarshan, which is explained by the scientists as the power of gravitation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is holding millions of planets in space without any support. Similarly, Prithu Maharaj would not have had any difficulty supporting all his citizens and himself in space without the help of Mother Earth, of planet Earth. The Lord is known as Yogeshwar, the master of all mystics. Consequently, the planet Earth was informed by the king that she need not worry about his standing without her help. Om Jnanati Nirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurumilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kalamahyam Dadati Svavadatikam Vandeyam Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitantam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parichana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitantscha Namamam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadeshatarine Vanchakalpatalubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. Prithu Maharaj is relentless in his pursuit of Mother Earth. Even though Mother Earth is pleading with him for protection, still Maharaj Prithu is angry and wants to punish her and is not diverted from his resolve because Mother Earth says that if you kill me, who am the sustainer of everything that lives on this planet, then the entire planet and yourself and your subjects will all fall into the water of the Garbha ocean. In other words, she was trying to say that if you kill me, then all of you will also fall into the water. But Prithu Maharaj is not impressed with that argument. First of all, he calls her as pretty strong words actually. Stabdham and Durmadham. Stabdham indicates very puffed up, very proud. Durmadham also means the same thing, but it's a stronger word which means very mad. Mad refers to intoxication. It also refers to pride. So pride is also a state of intoxication. When a person is intoxicated, he doesn't know what he's saying. He doesn't understand who he is. An intoxicated person may think, I'm the king of the earth. Or he may think of himself as anything. He also has this false courage where he can go and fight with someone, even though in normal circumstances he would never have done that. So the word mother is intoxication. But pride is also a form of intoxication because one is completely divorced from reality. One doesn't actually understand who one is. And one thinks oneself to be something that one is not. And one imagines oneself to be something significant, something exalted, something great. That's pride. There's nothing to be proud of. But nevertheless, because of the power of the illusory energy of the Lord, the Maya Shakti, the conditioned living entity starts imagining very exalted things about himself. This is the problem. Actually, we are simply particles of spiritual energy. 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. That is what we are. Sometimes people get into arguments, you know. Maybe you've heard some people quarreling or having some egoistic arguments. Then one person will say, you know, you're saying this to me, do you know who I am? It's a good question. Very fundamental question. Even the person who's saying it doesn't realize how philosophical that question is. But they're speaking from a very bodily platform. Do you know who I am? I am so and so, such and such person. But if you really knew who he was, he wouldn't be speaking like that. And if you perhaps said that to a devotee, he would have said, yes, I know who you are. You're 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. You're the spiritual energy. You're part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. And you should be humble and serve the Lord. So with pride, you have all these false notions of one's identity coming up. False notions of the world and one's relationship with the world. So the word intoxication and pride are interconnected. And when one sits together, when one actually connects the two, at that time, okay, all this should be done before, not during the class. Okay. So the words pride and intoxication are very much connected. So in Sanskrit literature, when you have to use the word pride, the word mother is used. For example, the six enemies of the conditioned living entity. What are the six? Kama, which is lust. Second, krodha, which is anger. Lobha, third, which is greed. Fourth, moha, which is illusion. Matsara, which is envy. And finally, mother, which means madness of pride. So pride or intoxication is one and the same thing, actually, in a very interesting point. And here the word is not just mother, but durmada. Dur refers to very bad. Su means good, dur means bad. So when the prefix su is used, it indicates something good, something nice. Although Duryodhan's name was Duryodhan, but Yudhishthir and others would call him Suyodhan. Of course, even in the Bhagavatam, he's sometimes referred to as Suyodhan. The idea of calling him Duryodhan was that he's invincible, very difficult to fight with. But the other interpretation of the word is Dur means very bad, who is not ethical in fighting, who doesn't understand the morality of fighting, or code of conduct of war, and so on. So in any case, the word Durmadam is very strong. So Prithu Maharaj is using very strong language here to Mother Earth. You're puffed up, you're mad, insane. because it's a serious matter. It's a matter of the survival of thousands and millions of citizens living on earth who are hungry, and Mother Earth is not providing food. So it's a great crisis. So naturally Maharaj Prithu is extremely angry. So this is the first point. The second point is, he now responds to Mother Earth's statement that if you kill me, then we will all fall into the ocean, the Garbha ocean. And he replies, no problem. I can maintain the citizens. I don't need you to maintain it. And Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport here that Maharaj Prithu has maintained that he could uphold everyone by his mystic powers. He did not need the help of the earthly planet. Being the incarnation of Lord Vishnu, Prithu Maharaj possessed the power of Sankarshan, which is explained by the scientists as the law of gravitation, as the power of gravitation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is holding millions of planets in space without any support. Similarly, Prithu Maharaj would not have had any difficulty supporting all the citizens and himself in space without the help of planet Earth. It's a very important reflection on this concept of gravity or gravitation, which Srila Prabhupada is referring to here in the purport. What scientists today call gravity is not a phenomenon unknown to the Vedic scriptures. Actually, this has numerous references in the Vedic literature. Even though Isaac Newton in recent times put it in a mathematical form and expressed it as a physical law, but the concept of gravitation is there in the Vedic scriptures since time immemorial. The Sanskrit word for gravity or gravitation is gurutva or gurutva akarshan. The word guru, generally people understand the meaning to be a teacher. Is there any other word to the meaning guru?
Heavy.
The word guru is one who is heavy with knowledge. Not necessarily heavy in physical weight. One is supposed to be heavy in spiritual understanding or heavy in knowledge. So the word guru also indicates heavy or strong. And tva indicates the quality of that. The gurutva means the quality of heaviness. It indicates the existence of a mass. So wherever there is mass, there is a property that cannot be separated from it, which we call today as gravity. So anything that possesses mass has what we would call gravity. So what does it do? Akarshana. Akarshana means attracts. It attracts other objects that are similar, that have mass. So the phenomenon of gravitation is called Gurutva Akarshana, or just simply Gurutva. So is there many references that are there in the scriptures? I'll come to one or two references from Bhagavad Gita. But before that, for those who don't accept Vedic scriptures, etc., even in more recent times, there are scientists, let's say about 500, starting from 500 CE, I think now they've changed the terminology, earlier it was AD, BC and AD. So starting from 500 AD or even before that onwards, you had scientists like Varahamihira, or you had Brahmagupta, and you had Bhaskaracharya, and they all have mentioned in their works gravitation in different forms. They speak about how the planets don't fall down, how they remain, and that is because of a certain power. And there is something that attracts, and because of the power of attraction, they all remain in their particular orbits or in the way they are in space. The astronomical treatise Suri Siddhanta, which is well known, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur also wrote treatises such matter, that also talks about gravitation. So there is quite a lot of mention about gravitation in books that may not be technically called Vedic scriptures, but still they exist in the Vedic culture far, far before Isaac Newton. So the idea that because there is mass, it will attract another mass, which today we call gravitation. In the Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna explains in the 15th chapter, Gam avishya bhutani dhayam yamojasa. In this verse also we have the word dharayishyami, I shall uphold. Prithu Maharaj being an incarnation of the Lord said, I shall uphold everything. I don't need you, O earth. By my mystic powers, I can hold. Which means he's saying, I can generate gravity and I can ensure that everything will float and not fall down into the Karma ocean. So in the 13th verse of the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Gam avishya. Gam referring to the planets. I enter, avishya means enter. I enter into the planets. Gam avishya bhutani dharayami. And I hold up all the planets. Aham ojasa. Ojasa means his shakti, his power. So that ojasa shakti is gravitation, is Krishna's potency, very simply put. So because of that potency, the planets are floating in space. So Srila Prabhupada explains that the Lord enters into everything in existence and therefore everything is able to be sustained or maintained. The Lord enters into every atom. Andantarastha paramanu chayantarastham. And therefore the atoms maintain their structures. Today scientists are studying the nature of atoms and they speak of so many subdivisions of the atom and they keep changing their theories about it. But whatever it may be, the different elements of that constitute the atom, how are they all held together? Scientists today are studying these different kinds of forces in nature. And one of the forces is the force of radioactivity that disperses them. Another one is the one that holds it together. So there are these different kinds of forces, not just gravitation, but all kinds of forces that scientists are studying today are actually the potencies of Krishna. And it is such potencies that actually hold together or glue together everything, whether it's the atom, whether it's the earth planet or any other planet or the whole universe with its complex movement of various planetary systems in different orbits. It is only because Krishna enters into them that they are maintained like that. This is how Srila Prabhupada explains it in the purport. He gives the example of the soul entering into the body and therefore giving it life. He says when the soul is present in the body can swim, can float on water. But when the soul leaves the body, then the body sinks to the bottom. And Prabhupada clarifies that of course, after some time the dead body floats to the surface just like straw and grass. But initially when the body dies, when the person dies, then the body sinks to the bottom. So similarly, because the Lord enters into everything, so everything is afloat. When the Lord's potency leaves something, it will all sink. He gives another example. He says, when we hold a handful of dust in our palm, then the dust is being held together, protected, so it doesn't fall. It remains there. But if we throw the dust up in the air, then it scatters, it disperses, it falls everywhere, here and there. It falls to the ground. So similarly, Srila Prabhupada says that all the planets in space are held up by the fist, so to speak, of the universal form of the Supreme Lord through His potency. And that is why they're all there. They don't just fall down. They don't just go here and there. We don't find accidents happening. So there's a superb brain that's working behind all that. Very interesting example and easy for us to remember and to explain to people. This handful of dust. When it's there, that's gravitation that's there. It's holding together Krishna's power. The fist is holding together all the planets. You remove that hand, remove that potency, and everything scatters. It all falls down. So this way Srila Prabhupada explains how Krishna's potencies act to maintain, to sustain the entire creation. This power acts through Sankarshan or Anantashesh or Sheshanag actually. Sheshanag is also popularly referred to as Sankarshan. So law of gravity, the power of gravitation is nothing but the potency of Lord Sankarshan or Lord Shesha. Some days ago, last week, we were speaking about the different types of Shakti Aveshavatars, the incarnations of the Lord who are invested or endowed with certain potency to perform different functions. And Shesha is a Shakti Aveshavatar of the Lord who is invested with the potency to hold up the planets. Bhu-dharana Shakti. Bhu refers to the earth or to the planets. Dharana means to hold up. So the Lord functions through Sankarshan for the sake of upholding all the planets. You see, the original Supreme Lord Krishna is playing the flute in Vrindavan, grazing the cows, having pastimes with the gopis. He is not into holding up planets and all that. That's not his job. He wants to just play the flute and enjoy. So he expands himself. And then his expansions, they handle everything. In the material world, then he has it. Mahavishnu, then Karmodakshaya Vishnu, Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, he has Anantashesh. You know, they do all his functions. The whole task of universal management and so on, done through his personal expansions called Swamsha, which are Vishnu Tattva, and some through the demigods who are mostly Jiva Tattva, Vibhinamsha, separated parts and parcels. So Sankarshan is also one such potency. And Sankarshan is the one who holds everything together. Srila Prabhupada in one purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Adilila, gives an interesting explanation of the word Bhagavan, which means the Supreme Lord. Now the common understanding of the word Bhagavan is Bhaga and Van. Van refers to one who possesses, or Vat, one who is full of, or who possesses, and Bhaga refers to opulence. So Bhagavan is one who possesses all kinds of opulence in perfection. This is the general understanding or definition of the word Bhagavan. And here Prabhupada, in this purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela, in one verse, he elaborates on that a little further. He says, now we can speak in terms of Bha and Va. Bha, Ga and Va. And he says, Bha means the sustainer or the protector. Ga refers to the leader or pusher or creator. And Va refers to dwelling, meaning that the living entities dwell in the Lord and that the Lord also dwells within the living entities. So he explains that combining these concepts, the word Bhagavan carries the import of inconceivable knowledge, strength, energy, opulence, power, etc. And it is because of such inconceivable potencies that the Lord is able to fully sustain and protect everything. You see, to sustain and protect anything, it needs some potency. Even, say, if I have to hold up this book, it needs some strength to just do something as simple as this. So what then to speak of holding up innumerable universes and innumerable planets within each universe? Srila Prabhupada mentions in that purport about how human beings have set orbiting satellites around the earth in space. And it requires such a brain to actually do this. So all the scientific things, miracles happening now require very big scientific brains to calculate all the things, make all the materials, put it all together, boost it up at a certain level in space, and then ensure that it goes round and round at a certain altitude. A lot of brain work required. So Srila Prabhupada says that even for putting tiny little satellites up in space, we recognize the necessity of brains. What then to speak of the gigantic, inconceivable brain of the Supreme Lord, who is ensuring that all the planets and the universes are floating in space. Very interesting, but simple logic. So anyone, next time, who argues with you about, you know, the existence of God, these are some simple arguments that you can give. Intelligence is required for the simplest of activities. Potency or strength is required for the simplest of activities. So how is it that we say that for such gigantic scales that there is no intelligence or no potency required? That doesn't make sense. It is not logical. Which is more intellectually challenging? To believe that everything is happening in a precise, harmonious, structured way with no intelligence behind it? Or that there is some intelligence behind it? Which is more intellectually challenging to accept? First one, that there is no intelligence, no potency behind it. They would dismiss it as saying it's a law of nature. But when there is a law, there's always a lawmaker. Laws don't come by themselves. Your red signals and green signals, traffic signals haven't come up by themselves. There's always someone there behind it who has made the laws. So similarly, the Lord has made all these laws and He's implementing them perfectly as well. So here Srila Prabhupada again mentions how Prithu Maharaj is saying, because he is also, he possesses the power of Sankarshan or Shesha to hold up the planets, because he himself is a Shakti Aveshavatar of the Lord. So he is not intimidated by Mother Earth saying that, you know, if I am killed then it will all fall down into the Garbha Ocean. This is no problem. I will maintain it by my potency and ensure that everything flows. So Prithu Maharaj is firm in his resolve to punish Mother Earth and is not worried about the possibility of Earth falling down. Actually, sometimes the Earth does fall down. It has happened in history. Twice at least. And that's when the Lord appeared as Varahadev. In the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, Srila Rupa Goswami mentions that Varahadev has appeared twice in this day of Brahma Kalpa. Generally, the incarnations of the Lord appear once in each day of Brahma. Sometimes they appear twice. Varahadev is one example of how the Lord appears twice. As you know, there are 14 Manus in one day of Brahma. The first Manu was called Svayambhuva Manu. And the lifetime of the Manu, that period, is called Manvantara. So the first appearance of Varahadev was in the Svayambhuva Manvantara, when the earth was flooded and was with the waters of devastation. So that was the first time that the Lord appeared through the nostrils he appeared through the nostrils of Brahma in a white color, white complexion. So he was called Shvetavaraha. Shvet means white. And therefore the whole day is called Shvetavaraha Kalpa. Srila Prabhupada explains this in his purport somewhere in the Bhagavatam. So Varahadeva appeared and rescued the earth and placed her back in her proper orbit. So here is the personification of that gravitational force, who is now re-establishing gravity again and making sure that the earth is invested with that potency to float. The second time that Varahadeva appeared was in the sixth Manvantara, that is the one just before ours. Our Manvantara is called the Vaibhasvata Manvantara. Vaibhasvata is a son of Vibhaswan, the sun god. And the one previous to this is the Chakshusha Manvantara. And the Manu is called Chakshu. Chakshu is Satyavrat Muni, not Satyavrat, King Satyavrat. You know the Noah's Ark story from the Bible? How many of you heard of Noah's Ark? In the Bible you have the story of Noah's Ark, where Noah was alone in the flood, and then the Lord came in the boat, and then they sat in the boat and they were saved. This is nothing but the story of Satyavrat, King Satyavrat actually.
Yeah.
And King Satyavrat sat in the boat with all the sages and the different herbs and the seeds and all that. And the Lord took the Matsya, the fish incarnation, and then moved around the waters of devastation till everything subsided. So King Satyavrat in the next Manvantara became the Manu himself, Chakshu. So during his Manvantara, Lord Varaha appeared the second time. And this time he did not only rescued earth from the Garbhodaka ocean, but he also killed Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyaksha, beg your pardon. Maitreya Muni, when he is explaining this to Vidura, he combines both these appearances and states it as one appearance. That the Lord descended, saved the earth and killed Hiranyaksha. And why did the earth fall into the Garbha ocean? Because of the depredations, because of the Ugra Karma, the horrible activities of Hiranyaksha, who was digging for gold. So which is an indication that if we do too much of digging and mining and we upset the subtle balance of the earth, then there are dangers. The earth could be destabilized in her orbit. And little things shake. This is horrible karma. Krishna refers to it as Ugra Karma. Works meant for destruction of the world. Going 5 kilometers into the earth and having, you know, tube railway networks, you know. Your railway networks 3-5 kilometers under the ground in some countries like Japan or Korea. You know. So you go there deep inside and you hew drill machines and you shake and vibrate the earth and all sorts of vibrations get set off. No wonder we have all these earthquakes happening, because they set off all these vibrations. So this disturbs the stability of the earth in her orbit, in her position in space. So therefore, what we can do today is very insignificant compared to the power of Hiranyaksha. So when Hiranyaksha started doing all this and digging for gold, the earth fell into the Garbha ocean. And then Varaha had to come and rescue planet earth and bring her up again. So the earth has fallen into the Garbha ocean. So the threat of Mother Earth is not an empty threat. It has factually happened, And had it been anyone other than Prithu Maharaj or any other incarnation of the Lord, then actually speaking, the earth would have fallen again into the Garbha ocean. But because it is Maharaj Prithu, who is the Shaktyaveshavatar of the Lord, then everything is okay. He says, I will maintain it. Even if you don't do it, I will maintain it by my mystic powers. So he will continue chastising her, and now we will see in the next verses of Mother Earth surrenders and offers prayers to Maharaj Prithu. So we'll stop here. Are there any questions? Yes.
My question is, like, how long the Manu's life, like, what's the lifespan of
Manu? What is the lifespan of Manu? The lifespan of Manu is 71 Chatur Yugas. One Chatur Yuga is a set of four Yugas, Satya, Trita, Dwapar, Kali. This is called one Divya Yuga or Chatur Yuga. So roughly, approximately 71 such cycles constitute the lifetime of one Manu. And 14 such Manus or Manvantaras, they become 1000 Chatur Yugas. And that is one day of Brahma, that is 12 hours of Brahma. Okay. Yes?
Maharaj, there is a mention of the bridge between India and, you know, Setu.
Yes.
There is also something to do with the gravitation. Lord Rama put it.
Yes. So when Lord Ram was going to Lanka to rescue Sita Devi and to kill Ravana, his army of monkey soldiers, they constructed a bridge across the sea. The bridge was made of stones that were floating on the water. And this is again an exhibition of the Lord's inconceivable potency. And Srila Prabhupada explains that the Lord floats millions and millions of planets and universes, so for Him to float some rocks on the sea is not a very remarkable thing. But because He is playing the role of a human, He has descended in the human species, and because His bridge has been built by His devotees who are in the bodies of monkeys and bears, so from our standpoint, it appears very remarkable, extraordinary. But from the Lord's point of view, it's hardly anything. It's just a small little thing. What is a little bridge in some rocks across an ocean when here He is floating enormous planets and universes, gigantic universes in the space? But because it happens within human society, so then we glorify the Lord for that. So that is only a very, very, very tiny exhibition of the Lord's potency. And even then He does it through His devotees. When Hanuman went to Lanka, He didn't need the bridge, He jumped. But when Ram wanted to cross, He needed a bridge. Yes? That's His Leela. Of course, He actually doesn't need a bridge. But just because He was playing the role of a human, so He acted as if He needed a bridge. Yes.
I was once told a story that we have a very beautiful botanical gardens here, and during the time the Lord Shortopa was in Melbourne, he would go for a walk in the botanical garden with the devotees. And the devotees actually asked him about the gravitational pull of the earth and what gravity was. And I'm not absolutely sure that this is a true story, but I heard Prabhupada was saying that gravitational pull, scientists believe that gravity is by the pull of the earth, but Prabhupada said it is the weight of air on the living entities that keeps them fixed to the ground. That the reason why air fixes the living entities to the ground is that if they were only held down by gravitational pull, birds would not be able to fly in air. because birds could fly through air, they could override the gravitational weight of air, and that's where planes and animals can fly. Krishna also says, I enter each and every one, every planet, and I give them their orbital. They receive their orbits. Now, are there two forms of gravitational pull and orbits? Are they slightly different? That's my question.
Okay, so your question, for the sake of some who are hearing on the internet, your question is that you heard that one time when Srila Prabhupada was taking a walk in the botanical gardens here in Melbourne, someone asked him about gravitation, and he said that the gravitation is because of the weight of the earth, or weight of the air on the living entities, and that's why they're on the earth rather than the attraction of the earth itself. I haven't heard that conversation, I haven't read about it, but I can certainly say what Prabhupada has said in his purports in various places, including the current purport here, that ultimately what is called gravitation today in modern language is nothing but the potency of the Lord. So it is a potency of the Lord that keeps planets in orbit in this particular space, position in space. They are floating in a certain way. It also keeps all of us fixed rather than flying off into space. So it is the potency of the Lord. That's the sum and substance of what Prabhupada speaks about gravitation as far as his purports and other lectures are concerned. Yes.
I'd like to understand. It's mentioned that the universe is a floating cause of motion, and then also you hear that Sheshanag is holding up the universe. Is there a way to understand these two?
Okay. The question is that we've heard that the universes are floating in the causal ocean, and we also hear that Anant Sheshana is holding up the universes on his hoods. So these appear like two different contradictory explanations. So are the universes being held up by Sheshana, or are they floating on the ocean? That's the question. Well, they are both. When we speak of Ananta Shesh holding up, we should also understand from the point of view of the potency of Sheshanag holding up everything. Right? So that is how it is intended to be understood. Some of these things on the cosmological scale are very difficult to conceive with our minds. Because how is it possible at that scale? It's just so huge that it is not possible to accommodate this with our brains. But yes, the principle is that it is Sheshana who is actually, his potency is holding up all of these things. That is the main point. Okay? Yes?
Just wanted to understand that example a bit more, you were saying.
A handful of dust.
Yes, because in that case, if we were to explain it to someone, or even to understand properly, one sand is supporting other sand to be in the field.
So you want a further explanation of the analogy of the handful of dust, yes? Now Srila Prabhupada explains in Bhagavad Gita 15.13 in the purport that just as we would hold some dust in our hand, in the palm of our hand, and it wouldn't fall down, but if we let go of the dust or threw it up in the air, then it would fall down to the ground. So what is preventing it from falling down is our palm, our hand. So similarly, all the planets would ordinarily have fallen down. They would not have been able to maintain their position in space. But the fact that they're in their positions is because of the hand of the Lord, so to speak. Because the Lord, the universal form of the Lord, his hand, not to be taken in a literal sense, as the hand, but indicating that that is the potency of the Lord. Just as the potency enters into the planets and keeps them afloat. That is the idea. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, we started the verse, you know, Prithu Maharaj is telling Mother Earth that, you know, you're actually very proud, you're puffed up, and you're playing, she's actually playing all these tricks by turning into a, using her mystic powers, turning into a cow to be pardoned. But Prithu Maharaj is telling her that this is not going to work, you know, I've caught you. My question is, this tendency of covertness, in Hindi we say chaturai, we adopt this means of staying in the good eyes of others, or to be seen as a good devotee, or to be seen as I've not done anything wrong, it was someone else, or it was circumstantial or whatever. This is quite subtle way of promoting oneself or being in the good eyes of others through the means of this covertness, this chaturai. How do we deal with this?
Your question is that here Mother Earth is trying to save herself by giving so many reasons, also putting forth her innocence. It's a kind of cunningness or covertness to try to escape responsibility for one's mistakes. So similarly, we also try to project a certain image of ourselves to people at large, which is not correct. So how does one deal with it? Well, for ourselves or for others? Ourselves. Well, simply we don't do it, that's all. Of course, there is a certain degree of, shall we say, discretion that is important. It doesn't mean that because we want to be straightforward, we don't want to be cunning and we want the world to know what we are really, that we say everything that's on our mind, like Facebook, yes? What's on your mind? Just say whatever's in your mind. That's not what it means. Being straightforward also doesn't mean just say whatever comes to your mind. No, that's not it. Before we speak, we have to think carefully. But the point is that we should not be duplicitous. You know, we should not try to project ourselves to be something which we are not. That is the point, yes. And that is a sign of a devotee. A devotee will not do such a thing. A devotee will be humble and straightforward. And yes, this is what I am. But at the same time, he will not be proud. That's the way I am and I'm going to do it like this because that's me. No, a devotee will be humble and want to say, yes, I'm willing to change. If this particular nature of mine is causing a problem, I'm happy to try to change it. So if there is a humbleness, a humility there, then everything becomes all right.
Well, the problem occurs where one is unable to identify this in oneself. One is able to go behind the layers of explanations, and like it is, like we explained, it's the power of madness. One puts forward so many reasons, explanations to oneself and to others.
So your question is, one may oneself not be able to understand this, others will very quickly tell us that. Very quickly. That should not be a problem. Very soon we will be made aware of our deficiencies by others. Sooner or later, one way or the other. One final question. If there's anyone? Yes.
So Maharaj, you're talking about Uttarakarma. So directly or indirectly, while living in this world, we are utilizing some of those resources that the government is providing. So is there a way out of, you know, not performing Uttarakarma while we are in this material world?
Okay, so the question is that directly or indirectly we are utilizing the fruits of ukra karma, unbeneficial acts. And is there some way we can avoid that? By simplifying our life and making it as natural as possible. But as you have rightly mentioned, it is probably very difficult to do it completely. For example, this microphone we're using now. Who knows what ukra karma has gone behind? manufacturing this machine, this little thing. We just see it in front of us and it looks slick and it looks nice, and but so much goes behind it. And what happens after this becomes non-functional? That's also another issue.
Mm-hmm.
Where does it go? It goes and becomes another piece of junk that pollutes the land. It goes to some quote-unquote developing country where they'll put it in the land and pollute that land. So we are utilizing so many products without even thinking. Our computers, our phones, our cars. However, the only saving grace is that we can say we are trying to use it for Krishna's service. And that's it. Apart from that, we can try to make life as simple and natural as possible. This is what Srila Prabhupada meant when he said, simple living, high thinking. Simplify to the extent that is possible and avoid unnecessary acquisition of all these gadgets and this and that. Yes? Today's world, people are fascinated with gadgets. They're just intoxicated with gadgets, electronic gadgets. Yeah? Maybe we can try to simplify in whatever degree is possible. One last, who had a question? You had?
I had.
Yeah, one more.
Thanks, Maharaj. Maharaj, you see, there is some kind of a conflict between two devotees. One is Prithu Maharaj and Mother.
Yeah.
And, they're, even though country, but still they are, they are in more devotional life, very great Vaishnavas. Sometimes, we have sometimes conflict, They want to do service, both are want to serve Krishna in a different way, or, best way. So, but after that also that stresses are there, it's not able to come out. How do you deal when you have that kind of, argument and conflict among devotees?
The question is, here we have two great devotees having a conflict. Prithu Maharaj and Madharat. Sometimes it happens that amongst devotees also there may be some conflict about doing some service. Both want to serve Krishna. So, how can one resolve it? Yes? Well, one should be realistic and understand that there is no way you can avoid differences of opinion, and neither should be worried about that too much. Because we are all individuals, and because of that individuality and free will and different natures, we will all think differently about different things. That is only natural. It happens even in the spiritual world. So it's not that we will expect that everyone will think exactly in the same way about every detail of all that has to be done. That's just not possible. And it wouldn't be nice also, we'll be robots. Just programmed to act in just certain ways. Everyone likes only, orange, or no one likes apple, just orange. Yes? So we are different people, we are different natures, we have different tastes, even in the spiritual world. There are different rasas, yes? So we shouldn't worry about differences of opinion, differences of approach and thought. It's healthy. The problem arises when we cannot come to some harmonious conclusion, when we cannot reconcile these different ideas. So what's needed is a higher level of consciousness, Krishna consciousness, where we can see, we get the intelligence to reconcile these different things. So it needs spiritual intelligence, it needs humility, it needs a larger understanding, it needs that compassion, it needs so many other qualities. And then it becomes very easy to handle. Even when there are challenging situations, it can be resolved by application of these Vaishnava principles. The point being that everyone should be focused on Krishna exclusively. To the degree that one is not Krishna conscious, to the degree that one's heart is infected with things like ego or self-interest and things like that, to that degree it would be hard to bring about some congruence or some uniformity in the manner of approach of how we should do a certain thing. Right? Of course, on certain fundamental things there has to be unanimity. Krishna's Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now everyone has to agree. If you want to be part of this movement, you have to agree. Otherwise, you have to go to some other movement. Yes? So certain things are non-negotiable that you have to accept. We will all accept Srila Prabhupada as the foremost authority in our movement. Non-negotiable. There's no scope for differences of opinion there. Then you have to be elsewhere. But within the movement, yes, there is scope for healthy debate, healthy discussion. That's also a sign of intelligence. So the thing is, we discuss it in a way that is not, shall we say, disruptive. In a way that doesn't create disharmony. That doesn't create Vaishnava aparad. If there's a healthy exchange of views, that is good. Sometimes it's called churning. By such churning, the best solution emerges. Because what my opinion may not necessarily be the best. I may think it is the best, but it may not be. Maybe someone else has a better idea. And when I hear the better idea, I think, oh, actually, that's right, yes. But if I stick to my ego and say, because I thought of the idea, it's my idea, I have to do it no matter what, then that's a problem. But if I'm humble enough to appreciate that someone else may also make a very good point, and maybe that approach is good, then it'll be nice. So it calls for this bit of open-mindedness, it calls for humility, it calls for, you know, having this devotional attitude. And I was mentioning this similar question came up at some program I was at yesterday. So in little matters, sometimes we can let go also. We don't have to, even though I may be right in something, but if it's not really something very important, and if someone else is going to be affected too much by me taking a very strong stand on it, let go of it. We don't have to take strong stands on just about everything in life. Right? The curtain has to be yellow, it can't be pink. No, it's for Krishna, Krishna likes this. Okay, fine, just go along with it. Yes? So if you have a bit of an open mind, then it's fine. But certain principles, no compromise. Certain things have to be, we have to be very strong about that. Krishna will give us the intelligence to do that. Okay, thank you very much. So we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande.